Let me hit you with this pure goober right now. Right.
All right.
Fill me with goo, Daddy. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
You're a neoliberal. I'm a neoliberal. We're all neoliberals for now.
For now? That's ominous.
All right, before I read this, let's just review who the fuck is Alan Gubert.
Fucking big swinging dick Gubert just out there on the spreading farm knowledge to all the plains and mountain folk.
Alan Gubert is a syndicated columnist, author of The Farm and Food File, which is his and
my personal deity.
Which is his weekly column on like the state of agribusiness and food. So for a compost theme podcast, you know, we're interested in Gubert because he's interested in food, agriculture, and political economy, right? That's why it's a natural synchronicity there.
I feel like he's going to get blacklisted by the MPAA pretty soon.
So in the past, in our first episode, actually, we looked at an Alan Gubert article, and I described Gubert in what I still think is a pretty accurate way, comparing him to, maybe it's not an accurate way, it's probably an esoteric way that most people won't understand the reference to.
Of course you feel like it's accurate.
Yeah, it's not accurate at all. I compared him to the SRs, the Social Revolutionaries of Tsarist Russia.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, but basically the type of person who understands like a basic social critique of capitalism, you know, that these big businesses, these market economies don't care about, you know, poor working people at all. And if anything, just serve to fuck them over, right?
I feel like most rural people understand that inherently. It's just that they don't think that anything like well, it's not like they've ever been taught that there's ever been like some type of counter to that.
Well, yeah, anything that would like effectively seek to undermine that system, though, is un-American and unpatriotic and can't be entertained.
Duh.
Well, and that's why. Wait a
minute. When's the last time you sang the national anthem?
Well,
I'm keeping an eye on you, podcast man.
Well, and that's why I compare him to the SRs, the Social Revolutionaries, because those were a group of, you know, basically socialists who like went to the countryside, went to the serfs and the peasants in rural Russia, and tried to like make them see how they were being exploited and taken advantage of. Didn't really have like a coherent like political program to tie them into, but rather just hope that one would kind of spring organically from their awareness, to use a modern liberal term, right? Like we need to spread awareness.
They went and did an idealism, and then the peasants were like, everything's fucking terrible and we know whose fault it is. Now you want some of this fucking potato or like what?
Yeah.
Like I got to work in the morning.
My family is starving.
Yeah, I got to work in the morning. My family's starving. I'm trying to get drunk, dude. What? We know that the Tsar is a fucking asshole.
All right. So Alan Gubert is usually pretty on the mark when it comes to identifying social problems in agribusiness. But in terms of actually connecting that with any kind of causative agent that might correct said problem, that's where he runs into trouble. Let's see what he says.
He would run into some major trouble if he did start doing that, actually.
Oh, they'd take away his column. Yeah. But that's why we get to talk about it, right? So
maybe he knows that, and that's why he doesn't do it.
You're a neoliberal. I'm a neoliberal. We're all neoliberals for now. All right. For almost 50 years, the world has gotten faster, richer, and yes, fatter. The power
I hope that quote turns out to be more true than when fucking what's his name, that Wallace dude, was talking about segregation.
Segregation today, segregation tomorrow. That one?
I mean, well, yeah. Here, I
well,
mean,
hold on, hold on. I'm gonna quibble.
Just say you're like an eighth grade Jared, and you're watching some video about the 60s in history class, because that's how we teach in South Dakota. You just watch like fucking a VH1 documentary or something. And then this motherfucker pops up talking about,
in the name of the greatest people that have ever trod this earth, I draw the line in the dust and toss the gauntlet before the feet of tyranny. And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
Let talking that way. Like, I'm never going to forget that.
Should I put in that quote, that clip here?
I mean, probably, but this quote just like seemed to me to be that type of quote.
Well, let me explain why this is wrong, though. For almost 50 years, the world has gotten faster, richer, and yes, fatter. All right. So 50 years, we're talking since the 1970s, right? Fuck, the world population...
Pretty sure at this point, 50 years ago, it was like 2001 or something, wasn't it?
50 years ago would be 1972.
Am I right? 50? Fuck, how? Time is a bitch, dude.
So, I think without looking at the stats, I think it's reasonable to say that the world population has probably doubled in that time frame. We've probably more gone from doubled. About, are you kidding me? Probably more than doubled. Yeah.
Wasn't it like the 60s when we hit a billion?
So... I would say, okay, faster is kind of a nebulous thing, right? But I think that to assume that like the world has gotten richer in the past 50 years is to take a pretty narrow lens in what you're considering the world, right? If we consider that there's twice as many people as now as there were 50 years ago, that most of those people live in the global south in extremely poor conditions. If anything, the world has gotten much poorer, more crowded, and much leaner in the last 50 years as resources have dried up, people have become more competitive, and the population has grown.
Well, if we just get some more innovation, though, man, that's going to change?
Well, don't tell that to the neoliberals, because they think that it's faster, richer, and fatter. And the power behind all that ahem growth has been neoliberalism. And the ahem is Gubert's ahem, okay?
So wait, are faster, richer, fatter, are those supposed to be good things?
Well, that's the thing, is Gubert's trying to problematize it, but not in the way that we're trying to problematize it, right? We would say it has not gotten faster, richer, and fatter. It's gotten poorer, leaner, and if anything, slower in the ability for people to find social advancement. Consider the ability of a person to like advance in a class structure in the 1940s and 50s versus today. I mean, certainly for some people, like people of African American descent, right? People who are marginalized, that would not be the case. But
you know how they just I'm sure Gubert said this before, they just don't make things like they used to, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's his whole shtick.
I think part of the problem is, man, bootstraps are just not made like they used to be.
Oh, God.
You just can't pull quite as hard anymore.
All right. So let's read this. So Gubert's going to dispute the sentiment. We're disputing his dispute. For almost 50 years, the world has gotten faster, richer, and yes, fatter. The power behind all that ahem growth has been neoliberalism.
Now, they're saying the world. I feel like they're talking about the U.S. because,
yeah,
Gubert, we basically think we are the world.
Gubert's an Illinois farm boy. That's the lens that he is approaching this through. And so let's hear his explanation of neoliberalism. Actually, let's give ours and then see if his lines up.
Critically, he's an Illinois farm boy that's older than us.
He's like 2.5 times our age. I think he's probably in his late 50s.
Yeah.
Wait, that would be twice our age. Wait, that would be... Never mind. I can't do math right now.
James, your dad is twice our age.
Yeah, you're right.
We're gonna die soon.
Well, the human condition. So, yeah, Gubert's older than us. Here's my definition of the neoliberal, Jared, okay? Or what is neoliberalism? Neoliberalism is the modern impulse amongst both actors in states and corporations to favor market-based solutions to social problems. It's carbon credits, it's housing credits, it's, you know, educational credits for charter schools. Those are all neoliberal things that basically say this intractable problem that most people want the government to do something about, healthcare. What we need to do is create a heavily burdensome apparatus that just pushes these people into the hands of private industry, makes them buy health insurance, makes them get carbon credits, and then let that shit sort itself out so that we don't have to think about it. That's neoliberalism.
Well, it's the way forward, and it's going to work. And
let us never forget this fundamental truth. The state has no source of money other than the money people earn themselves. If the state wishes to spend more, it can do so only by borrowing your savings or by taxing you more. And it's no good thinking that someone else will pay. That someone else is you. There is no such thing as public money. There is only taxpayers' money.
I'm going to go get
there
a bunch of money.
There is no alternative.
And neoliberalism is like some black guy that talks nice comes around and...
I think that what we're going to have to do is somehow resuscitate the notion that government action can be effective at all. There has been a systematic... I don't think it's too strong to call it a propaganda campaign against the possibility of government action and its efficacy. And I think some of it has been deserved. You know, Chicago Housing Authority has not been a model of good policy making, and neither necessarily have been the Chicago Public Schools. What that means then is that as we try to resuscitate this notion that we're all in this thing together, leave nobody behind, we do have to be innovative in thinking what are the delivery systems that are actually effective and meet people where they live. And my suggestion, I guess, would be that the trick, this is one of the few areas where I think there are technical issues that have to be dealt with as opposed to just political issues. I think the trick is figuring out how do we structure government systems that pool resources and hence facilitate some redistribution, because I actually believe in redistribution, at least at a certain level, to make sure that everybody's got a shot.
You know, makes everybody feel really good about the progress of the country while he just loots and pillages the same as everybody else has.
Well, you're referring to Barack Obama, who famously was elected. What's that?
I said that was a terrible impression. I haven't heard him talk in a very long time.
No. I'm just saying, though, like what you're referring to is the fact that he like came into power after the housing crisis. And instead of like bailing out the people who had lost their savings on their houses, he bailed out the bankers. Yeah. And when he was asked why, he literally said, because to put like the bankers in jail and make them pay for their crimes would have done damage to the social order. So a neoliberal wants to preserve the social order.
I'm sitting here like, yes, do damage to the social fucking order. It's doing so much damage to everyone else.
Yeah, you know, the boot on your neck is, you know, the straps that you can pull yourself up with as far as these guys are concerned.
But right? Dude, I don't think the U.S., we can't do anything but neoliberalism now. We're fucked.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We don't have any productive capacity anymore.
Neoliberalism is basically like a meth head ideology, right? It's like, what if we did liberalism, but more and faster?
I mean, if liberalism dries up, the U.S. is going to be fucked.
Right. I mean, then it'll be really just a white nationalist, like ethno state, but.
Well, it already is, but.
I mean, liberalism is the veneer. That's the veneer that allows it to exist, like, politely, right?
Yeah, liberalism is just like fucking fascism, but with like, you know, smiley faces.
Well, interpret that a little bit. You know, the roots of like Hitler's eugenic ideology came from California at the time, where people what people thought that they were being good liberals.
Hitler didn't come up with anything.
No.
The U.S. and liked what he saw.
Let me finish what you were getting at. People in like California thought that by doing eugenics, they were being good liberals, like that they were, you know, ensuring a brighter future through a, a proactive government based like statistical measure, essentially.
They were being good liberals. It's just that liberalism is abhorrent to people of us.
Yeah.
That's what liberalism leads you to. Like, hey, man, we got to do a bunch of really fucked up stuff, but...
Mm-hmm.
For so long, government has failed us, and one of its worst failures has been welfare. I have a plan to end welfare as we know it, to break the cycle of welfare dependency. We'll provide education, job training, and child care, but then those who are able must go to work, either in the private sector or in public service. I know it can work. In my state, we've moved 17,000 people from welfare rolls to payrolls. It's time to make welfare what it should be, a second chance, not a way of life.
It's actually a good thing, and we got the stats to prove it.
And we talked about this a little bit in our economics episode, too, when we were talking about like John Locke and the neoclassical guys.
This shit has bothered me for a very long time.
Yeah. All right, continuing with Gubert. It's not a political label or a personal slander. Instead, as author Rana Faruhar explains in her new book, Homecoming, neoliberalism is, quote, an economic and political philosophy that capital, people, and goods should be able to cross borders freely in search of the most productive and profitable returns.
Nope.
Yeah, I would quibble with that a little bit as well.
That's already a lie. Take the people part out of it. They don't want people crossing borders.
Right. Yeah. That might be a maybe a neoliberal does. Maybe they want migrant labor, right? But they want to ultimate control so that they can send those people back after they build the soccer stadium.
Right. They do want that, but not officially. They do want that so that they can point at that. And
they want to be able to bring tens of thousands of people to like pick the fruit and then send them back.
Yeah. Right. Well, capitalism needs like a large mass of fucking destitute, desperate people that they can call criminals and scare the fucking the virtuous class into going to work.
Mm-hmm. So I, in some sense, though, I think this definition speaks to our point that this is an ideology of psychotic control, right? In search of the most productive and profitable returns for whom? Okay.
Well,
a neoliberal would say that, but did the indentured servants who like built those soccer stadiums in Qatar have the most productive and profitable returns for their labor that they could have achieved? I don't think so. A lot of people died. They were there's over 6,000 deaths.
Yeah, but there weren't people. That was
property.
If you're property, you're not a person, James.
This person could justify that in saying that there was some sort of risk assessment undertaken by these people. They didn't have to do these jobs. They signed up for them, right? Right.
People.
We could say, well, who created these desperate conditions in the first place in these poor countries?
Those people should
it's not a result of colonialism or, the systematic exploitation of their resources under colonial domination.
No.
Or the fact that there's been a brain drain for intelligent and capable people leaving those areas.
See, we keep calling them people. We're supposed to be neoliberals. We can't call them people, James. We got to call them migrants, or we got to call them we got to otherize them a little bit more. You can't just fucking be calling the people that are getting crushed by the system people.
Well, and that's the problem in comparing capital, people, and goods, is because you're equating all three of those things, right? And people should not be treated as capital or goods.
Guess what, James? Those people we were just talking about, they are capital, basically.
So I feel like this definition of neoliberalism that's been given to us is in itself offers a basic critique of neoliberalism.
Well, that is neoliberalism, though.
Right.
It's all doublethink.
it's productive and profitable for the people who already hold capital, right? And what is free is only for the people who control capital. Otherwise, you're essentially tightly controlled and regulated. You're essentially a good. You're essentially a good being controlled by the systems around you.
I think I just came up with a theory.
Okay, hit me.
You can tell somebody's politics instantly if you just get them to tell you what efficiency means.
Right, yeah. Right? Yeah. For a biologist, it's doing a task and using less energy.
I mean, maybe. What about
for a neoliberal, right?
What about a neoliberal scientist?
it's doing a task and making more money.
What about a fascist scientist? what if a fascist scientist? What if his country doesn't do so well in a big fight or something?
then you become the most neoliberal.
okay. Oh, right. Yeah. So the newest person to convert is like the biggest zealot.
Operation Paperclip is what a liberal would do. You know, like the Soviets like seized a lot of scientists and they put them to work in fucking, you know, gulags and in labor camps. But when we seized Nazi scientists, we treated them like, you know, the bells of the ball, right?
Well, that like was just, them- they were just, they were tainted resources. We had to save them, James. Our virtuous idea, because they had the brain poisoning, but they also had good brains.
Let's continue with the brain poisoning.
We had to unpoison the good brains.
Let's continue. In short.
To poison people's brains.
This is I think this is an accurate statement.
Support our Patreon if you would like your brain poisoned.
In short, it was the energy behind Ronald Reagan's trickle-down economics, the muscle that pushed Bill Clinton's free trade deal making, and the theory that powered the Bush and Obama administration's embrace of China's labor might and its mighty ag imports.
So those are all great things.
Well, I think that critically, this is a true statement in the sense that neoliberalism is an ideology which pervades and in some cases negates the artificial political binary that we see presented to normal people. Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, all neoliberals. The dressing might have been different.
All the same guy.
Yeah, you might have had a little side of social justice with this one. Maybe you had a little side of like hawkish imperialism with this one. Yeah. But they all basically believe the same thing. Politics, unquote, writes Faruhar, both an assistant editor of the Financial Times and a contributor to CNN, unquote, or wait, fuck, I gotta not do the quote. Politics, writes Faruhar, who is both an assistant editor of the Financial Times and a contributor to CNN, takes place at the level of the nation state. But economics has, for the last 40 years, been an increasingly global affair. And I will say, there's a lot of lefties employed at the Financial Times. So I'm kind of not surprised to be hearing this connection. And, she quickly adds, more and more of this global game plays by, quote, rules that have been dictated by a global technocratic class whose members have more in common with one another the majority of the people in their own country. You know, essentially just saying there's a transnational elite, you know, it's the people who are like, you know, going to World Cup games and, you know, taking holidays in Ibiza and that kind of thing. Right.
Turning up at Davos to
tell
everybody how great the world is.
Yeah. And certain little islands in the Caribbean. Yeah, you know, see Trash Future for more on this like type of person.
I like how we're just citing
referencing other podcasts. Yeah. That's especially so in the fields and pastures of farmers and ranchers who run into powerful neoliberal forces, mostly global business cartels, in nearly every aspect of their livelihood. Seed, fuel, fertilizer, machinery, meatpacking, transportation, exporting.
Yeah, what's that quote that I think it was fucking JFK had? Like, farmers, the only business that fucking buys everything retail and then fucking like pays for everything. I don't know. Basically, you know, farmers were getting fucked before NAFTA.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
My grandpa was bitching about NAFTA since it happened basically my entire fucking life.
Oh, interesting tie-in. NAFTA and the episode we just recorded on polydactyl cats. Vicente Fox, president of Mexico, who brought them into NAFTA, polydactyl on both feet.
What?
Yep, he had six toes.
Hell yeah.
He fucked over everyone in his country.
Problematic fave.
Vicente Fox.
Yeah, I mean... Has Mexico ever had a good president, like, in our lifetime?
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Some people like AMLO. Some people don't. But
Dude, I feel like the more I learn about that guy, that guy's got a lot in common with Mr. Trump.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I think I've heard that comparison before from some Mexicans.
Well, when I went to Mexico... we took this tour of like Mexico City at one point with this dude that was like, you know, he's like a fucking PhD holding historian that was like telling us about the history of like basically Germanic rule and like all the architecture that came out of that. And I don't remember if he mentioned the Zapatistas or not, or I might've asked him about it, but then I was asking him what he feels about AMLO. And I could tell that this guy was like, you know, just based off of all the shit that he was saying about like the history of Mexico and the revolution and all that stuff, I could tell he was probably pretty sympathetic to my point of view.
Yeah.
And he said something along the lines of he was like really excited about AMLO until AMLO like showed everybody who he was and then not so good anymore. But I'm not gonna claim to be like a expert on AMLO, well, but it seems like maybe
AMLO is carrying on the neoliberal tradition of North American leaders.
Well, that's all well and good, but he claims to be like a socialist and all that shit, which is a very neoliberal thing to do.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
See Elon Musk and Pete Buttigieg and all of the people that I just am really glad that are still alive.
All right, so continuing, these farmers, they're getting fucked over, as you said. That's because, Faruhar explains, the more success neoliberalism has in business, the more disconnected it becomes from people's daily lives. Now, kids, we call
that's by design.
We call that a contradiction, okay?
That's by design.
That is by design. That's a contradiction of capitalism. That's what leads to alienation.
Not again, for those people, for everyone that they're making the money off the backs of.
Yes, for the poor people.
Neoliberalism is fucking sweet if you are the person at the top.
Should members of Congress and their spouses be banned from trading individual stocks while serving in Congress?
No, I don't know to the second one. We have a responsibility to report in the stock. On the stock, but I'm not familiar with that 5-month review, but if people aren't reporting, they should be.
Why should they be banned?
Because this is a free market and we are a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that. Yes, ma'am.
If you're the one talking about neoliberalism. Yeah,
totally.
Well,
I'm getting paid to talk about it because we're talking about it, but we're not getting paid for it.
And this is another frustrating thing for me that I see all the time in the mainstream media, where basically some writer will like seize on some very basic tenet of Marxist critique. Basically, there's a lot of it going around right now about men who are out of work. Right. Like there was a Mike Rowe bit where he was talking about how there's like, 7 million able-bodied men who aren't even looking for employment. And I'm like, that's nothing to be surprised by. That's the reserve army of the unemployed. Like that's what keeps labor disciplined. Mike Rowe is saying like, oh, it's just all these fucking lazy, you know, lazy whiners and complainers.
Well, Mike Rowe doesn't know that that's actually part of the system and a good thing for people like him.
That's what disciplines the labor market, right? Like capital wants those people unemployed.
Yeah, well, he's dumb enough to think that that's a bad thing for people like him.
Right.
But then he also has to do that thing where, like, you know, sure, these people are like this and they need to feel fucking bad about it.
That's why it's babies first socialism. It's like, oh, there's all these unemployed people, and then they just completely lose any sight of like a unifying theory and are just like, it must be because they're lazy.
I mean, I'm not going to claim to be a scientist. You can claim that you are. But like, dude, is there any group of people that is like worse at their job, but also think that they're fucking incredible at it than writers?
Yeah. Goobert.
Like, well, I'm not even talking, at least he tries.
Goobert's trying here. Yeah.
But I mean, you know,
he's trying to educate the peasants.
I'm not even going to comment on this. I'm just going to say, like, writers trying to interpret scientific documents and then fucking communicate those.
That's terrible.
Not a very good track record. You know?
Yeah. All right. So let's hear the contradiction again. Farihar explains, the more success neoliberalism has in business, the more disconnected it becomes from people's daily lives. Quote, too many people crafting and or benefiting from the system mistook free trade for foreign policy and believed that unified global markets would always beget global politics. That's the people crafting and benefiting from the system mistook free trade for foreign policy.
Did they, though?
I mean, I think that what you're saying is that the free trade was foreign policy, right?
I mean,
like NAFTA, for instance.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we're getting gaslit here.
No, we are. You're right. So basically
what are you talking about? You just.
And by signing the North American Free Trade Agreement, we've committed ourselves to a better future for our children and for generations yet unborn. And this agreement will remove barriers to trade and investment across the two largest undefended borders of the globe and link the United States in a permanent partnership of growth with our first and third largest trading partners. The peace and friendship that we've long enjoyed as neighbors will now be strengthened by the explosion of growth and trade let loose by the combined energies of our 360 million citizens trading freely across our borders.
Okay, never mind. That was the project. But let's act like it wasn't the project.
Right. Let's consider NAFTA's effect on, like farming in America, right? So basically through the reduction of import tariffs, Mexican food grown in Mexico became much more competitive in an American market with food grown in America, right?
Yeah, because of, all the desperation in Mexico.
Right. So it's cheaper there to grow food and it's more expensive here. What that means is that that led to desperation in America as those farmers had to compete at a lower price producing in the same system that they had already been producing in. Right.
All right, I'm just going to put this out there. Is there any occupation in the history of man that's been more consistently fucked over than farmers?
This New Deal is an especially great victory for our farmers. Our farmers have gone through a lot over the last 15 years. They've been taken advantage of by everybody. Prices have gone way down. And we're working on some other deals that are going to make them very happy also. But this is a very, very big deal for our farmers. Mexico and Canada will be opened up a lot more than they are now. And I think there'll be a better spirit between the three countries, which is important for our farmers. The agreement will give our farmers and ranchers far greater access to sell American-grown produce in Mexico and in Canada. The deal includes a substantial increase in our farmers' opportunities to export American wheat, poultry, eggs, and dairy, including milk, butter, cheese, yogurt, and ice cream, to name a few. I want to be very specific. I want to be very specific, right?
Well, and so I think that what, Farihar is saying is that the people benefiting from the system are not just and this is a totally neoliberal thing to say, oh, it's not just the people running the massive agribusiness companies. Oh, it's also the people who get to buy food at a cheaper rate, right?
Well, yeah, because we're all...
Because you're just a consumer.
First.
You're just a consumer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a criminal if you can't consume anymore. It's like that thing. It's like that thing with the, I don't know, that fucking shit, like internet dudes. They, if you see a woman, she's either a whore or a virgin, and like inside every virgin there's a whore, but inside every whore there can't be a virgin.
What?
It's like that. I don't know.
You're right. There's a lot to unpack here, right? But let me just read this again really quick, okay?
I don't know what I'm saying, but I feel like that's accurate.
Too many people benefiting from the system mistook free trade for foreign policy. And again, NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Act, it was foreign policy.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, definitely.
So I just this person is trying to say. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so, you know, in neoliberalism, everybody's a consumer, right?
Yeah.
Or a criminal. Inside of every consumer, there lies a potential criminal. But inside a criminal, there isn't a consumer anymore because they're fucking taken out of that.
You're right. Yeah.
It's not a one-to-one, but that's what I was trying to...
I totally understand what you're saying. Yes.
The virtue, yeah, because... you know, like fucking the virtuous woman is a virgin, basically. The virtuous neoliberal subject is a consumer.
Right.
But there's always the chance that that virgin can become a whore. There's always the chance that that consumer can just become a criminal. And that is what you need to like
scare out
base your entire. That's what you need to focus on, basically, apparently.
That's beautiful. I love it. I think that that's exactly what we're getting at here. This person is trying to like not so clearly reflect that dichotomy.
Did you just chef kiss my like drunken conflation?
Yeah, I thought it was great.
All right.
So yeah, many believed that unified global markets would always beget global politics. But again, the international bourgeois does not care about those petty national political squabbles.
Right? Another problem with neoliberalism is these motherfuckers try to separate politics from economics, and you can't do that.
Yeah, well, what we need to do is like bind all of our economic production to a single state project, some kind of like Uber mention or something, you know, to create a greater man.
I don't know if I'm.
That's liberal thinking, right? That's liberal thinking is what I was going to say.
Did you just fucking turn into Friedrich Nietzsche and kill God again? What just happened?
I'm just saying that like that's that basic like idea is what spawns a liberal view. A social view
out
would
there,
you
though,
say.
Tie in with a different episode we did a little bit, but if there is such a concept as the Uber mention, I'm pretty sure that Grimer is the Uber mention of cats.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
He is the ideal subject, or the ideal fucking specimen.
But yeah, but basically to say, like, what we need to do is use the power of the state or the power of markets to create a greater man, to like force history forward. Like, that's a very liberal way of thinking, but that's also what gives rise to eugenics and fascism.
Well, you said state first. I feel like the neoliberal thing would be to only say markets and then maybe at the end be like, if that doesn't work, maybe we can use the state. But like,
I'm saying that's how we get from liberalism to neoliberalism, right?
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
You see where I'm coming from?
Liberalism definitely will use the state. I feel like neoliberalism is just like, you know what? Fuck the state. Let's gut that and we'll just do markets for everything.
So, and just to counterpoint, I would say, like, as a socialist, from a socialist perspective, that, like, the goal of the state is to provide first and foremost for the neediest people. There's no, like, progressive vision of, like, outcome beyond providing more services and making more people comfortable.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Like, influence. Go ahead.
I just, you know... I'm getting a little worried now because it doesn't sound like you're leaving a lot of room for me to profit. So how am I supposed to help other people if I'm not profiting off of their labor, James?
Good question.
Okay. Cause I'm starting to get scared now.
All right. Well, let's see. Did neoliberalism work? did the belief that unified global markets would beget unified global politics work?
Obviously. What do you mean, James? I can talk to you. I can talk to you on the internet. We can make a podcast.
Well, Gubert says it hasn't. Gubert said neoliberalism hasn't worked.
What? Wow. That's a paddling. He needs to report to his nearest neoliberal fucking discipline thing, and he's got to get the cane.
Quote, what once was promoted as a safe markets, safe world idea to counter last century's dance with fascism, socialism, and war has now grown into populism, a natural result of this disconnection between global economy and national politics. I got to throw a big red flag on putting socialism right by fascism there. Like,
well, the same thing, James. It's the state doing something. What, it's called national socialism, national socialism.
Oh, my God.
Same thing, right?
Oh, my God. Again, no.
Oh, shit. I thought we were in high school again. My bad. Basically, those are just both bad.
Again, just like in our like definition of neoliberal, I think equating fascism and war with socialism is very problematic and kind of a false equivalency here.
Well, I mean, politics, though, they're a horseshoe because I said so. And
no.
Oh, no. Well, so, what if I bore you for 14 days attempting to prove that until you just say I don't want to.
Well, so fascism, a patriarchal society focused on the military and the development of the, you know, the uber state, the uber mention as well, and then war, of course, like violent military conflicts, those two go hand in hand. But again, socialism trying to provide for the needs of poor people and build a more equitable economy that doesn't just run on raw exploitation doesn't really deserve to be in there with those other two.
I'm just hearing that fascism and socialism are both violent and that should be stopped at all costs. Especially if somebody is trying to, light up the
to tax you
and come after me for taxes, or maybe for like the way that I've treated them and their family because I employed them or something. That I don't like violence, James.
So I think that
all, you know, violence is the same and bad.
Yeah, taxes are violence, right? Sorry, I forgot.
Well, my accountant has been demonstrating to me how that's true over the last about year and a half. He charges a pretty reasonable fee, though. I can, if you want to, like, you know, actually learn, I can give you his credentials.
Oh my God. All right. I have to read this just dense ideological sentence one more time. I'm sorry. I'm doing this a lot in this one. What once was promoted as safe markets, safe world, to counter the last century's dance with fascism, socialism, and war, has now grown into populism. Again, something which is neither good nor bad. Like, populism is just like appealing to poor, but it's just appealing to like working class people.
Yeah, remember that Bernie Sanders commie dude? That guy was a populist. he was bad, James.
I know, and of course Trump was labeled a populist as well. But
well, they're just the same.
Just James. Appealing to working class people doesn't mean you actually do anything for them, of course, right? So even this word in this place, I'm not sure means what these people think it
what
means.
What do you mean, James? Do you know how many flags? Of not even just the American flag. Do you know how many flags people were inspired to buy because of Donald Trump? Now, you tell me that didn't benefit the working class.
You know, dude, what you're kind of making me think here is like these four things that he's laid out are kind of like the bogeymen of neoliberalism. It's fascism, socialism, war, and populism.
Like, for sure.
All of those things will disrupt the quote unquote efficiency of markets. And that's why must all be ultimately avoided.
Oh, dude, war is terrible for the efficiency of markets.
In the
unless you're selling term. Like, unless you're selling like fucking weapons or slaves or something, but right, like,
yeah.
Also side note, dances with fascism, most problematic Kevin Costner movie I've ever seen.
So this populism is a natural result of the disconnection between the global economy and national politics. And okay, sure. I guess, right? In the sense that people are trying to appeal to the working class by saying, oh, you know, these swamp people, these big businesses, the deep state. Swamp people. Well, you know what I mean, right? Like, they're just trying to use this working class appeal.
No, I do, but dude, yeah. I feel like the term swamp people is like the most that is like the most genius neoliberal thing I've ever heard.
Oh, you're one of those swamp people, right?
Well, dude, because the people you're talking about are the furthest removed from actual swamp people that I can imagine.
Right, yeah.
And the real swamp people would probably just fucking kill them and throw them by you. Deservedly. And just be like, you fucking deserve this shit. Mm-hmm. You're the reason that I don't have fucking clean drinking water, you prick.
All right. As the last decade in rural America has made plain, that disconnect between economics and politics is almost complete.
Yeah, why don't we just call a spade a spade? He's saying rural, but that's a euphemism. It is. Real America.
Real America.
Rural America.
We're talking flyover country. We're talking red states, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't got an airport in my town, and I don't fucking want one. You know, they got a cat cafe up there at the city now.
You know, they want to put up goddamn windmills. Fucking windmills to catch air.
You just fucking pay money. The power all comes from a windmill. There's fucking cats everywhere. And that's good. That's progress, apparently, to these godless. That looks like communism. Cats and coffee. I just can't even.
All right. Faruhar knows this. Large portions of her book outline how the built-in resiliency that once was characteristic of the nation's farm and ranch communities has been replaced by highly specialized, inherently fragile industrial farms and livestock operations where efficiency and growth are paramount to community and resilience. I would say it's also been replaced by a lot of methamphetamine and fentanyl.
Mm-hmm. And that last thing she just said? What? Read that where again.
Efficiency, okay. Inherently fragile industrial farms and livestock operations where efficiency and growth are paramount to community and resilience.
No,
there's no community and resilience.
Yeah. Opposite. That's what has destroyed the community and fucking resilience.
Yeah. Efficiency and growth is, you know, technological specialization. That's removing people from the community.
Dude, the farming community I grew up in was already pretty much hollowed out by the time I was, you know, I mean, I was born in 88 in this area. The community that used to be there was already fucking hollowed out before I was even born.
Well, that's resilience right there.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Like, that's neoliberal resilience, right? Like that's what a neoliberal wants to see.
For sure. Right? Like, I guess the people are still fucking alive, but like, I feel like they should almost do like a case study on the town that I grew up outside of, because there is so much. Like, I don't even like there are so many like developmental issues in that town.
Well, and there's a
lot of deaf, like,
right.
Dude, besides me, everybody that got on the bus after me from Odo, they were like deaf or like they had even worse developmental issues. Mm. Like, I guess I'm not going to say that being deaf is a developmental issue, I guess. But like the kids that came from Odo, they were like they were not the fucking kids that were like, you know, homecoming king.
Well, so to go back to this, I think like what they're saying in efficiency and growth is that land is still being exploited. It's just that now it takes fewer people than ever before to exploit the raw resources.
Are but you it's kidding not- me? Have you ever seen a 42 row planter?
Right. But there are fewer people working, and the other people who in the past would have been working have been consumed by, again, methamphetamine and fentanyl.
Yeah, well, I don't know about fentanyl, but I also don't know. I don't know, dude, because so when I was growing up, I didn't really know what.
Or literally, like, think about like how many just like middle class boomers are taking OxyContin. And just like spaced out every day, all day on
that's medicine though.
Same. All I'm saying, it's like,
no, I know
these like, syndromes and then the drugs that are used to treat them just fill this void in these quote unquote highly efficient communities.
Well, I mean, dude, I feel like neoliberalism is basically just like liberalism plus fascism a little bit, because like, look at how Germany treated pharmaceuticals when they were like getting fucking buck wild. And then compare that to what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a fucking Adderall shortage. You know what I mean? Like, we literally can't make enough fucking Adderall.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's still going on, but that was like one of the things that COVID brought us was like, now, you know, all the speed that Americans are on, we can't get our hands on it anymore.
Right. All right. So chapters include in this book on neoliberalism.
All right. I need to pause to.
Yep. Yep. We'll take a quick pause.
I'm just saying, man, much like Gubert is trying to tell us, decisions have consequences. And you might not know what they are. You might know very well what they are, and that's why you did it. But
is that what Gubert's trying to tell us?
That decisions have consequences?
I don't think that's what he's saying at all.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we should let him tell us what we're saying.
Well, he's basically just doing a little book review. This is like when a podcast reviews a movie. That's what Gubert's doing right now, basically.
Oh, okay. I thought he was trying to like editorialize.
No, not really. We'll see what we'll see where he goes with it. So Faruhar, wait a minute.
Is that all they teach you in like journalism school, is how to editorialize without like seeming like you're editorializing?
How to say stuff without saying anything? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. How to like basically editorialize with context.
Mm-hmm. So Faruhar knows this, that the disconnect between economics and politics is almost complete. Large portions of her book outline how the built-in resiliency that was once characteristic. Oh, wait, I already read this part. All right. So chapters in this book include The Problem with Big Food, Move Fast and Grow Things, and Two Americas. All point to how the world's adoption of neoliberal economics has left it and most citizens vulnerable to increasingly brittle, quote-unquote, global supply chains and rising fascism. Witness today's Hungary, Poland, Sweden, and Italy. While strengthening Go ahead.
I like how it took COVID for people to realize, like, uh-oh. Maybe we shouldn't run all this.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe this extremely precarious and brittle, like, system built on just-in-time production is not going to be able to withstand a considerable shock.
Maybe labor shouldn't have went searching for.
You got to let that cat inside, Jared, for the podcast.
Oh, god damn it! Sorry. All right, so I have heard though, supposedly the cats do not meow. They learned how to meow because it's mimicking like a crying baby. Do you have any comments on that, James?
I have not seen that. I'm pretty sure wild cats meow.
Supposedly they don't meow at each other. I don't know.
Well, I did not see anything about that in my research.
You know how like...
Go with the cat in, Jared.
You know about like a quarter of... I will. But you know about how like a quarter of my information is basically derived by like listening to people that are basically the equivalent of the drunk uncle that Bobby Moynihan used to portray on Saturday Night Live? All right, get in here, Jesus Christ. Just telling you, if you fucking shit in my house, you're going outside again.
All right, I guess you were right, Jared. It's a partially learned behavior.
See, sometimes.
Well, no, they do it when they're kittens to get their mom's attention. And then they continue to do it with humans.
That's right, but adult cats don't meow at each other, right?
A wild adult cat wouldn't be meowing.
All right. Well, see, some of my hearsay turns out to be true sometimes.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm always more often than not, I got to say. Yeah. Like you were talking about like the Comanches being like a fairly warlike, you know, like raiding people. Like, yeah, basically true. Like in our last Jim Bowie episode.
Yeah, that's what I got you for.
Yeah. You got me.
I just tell you some shit that I'm pretty sure I heard at some point.
Yeah. And but you're usually right.
I remember I've had a lot of concussions though, so I don't really remember exactly what I remember.
So listeners, while I was teaching college level like biology for majors, like freshman level biology 111, once Jared was staying with me and I had him take a test that I had written for like a midterm, you know, like college level biology course.
This was like half of your course worth of knowledge, right?
Yeah, it was a sizable, it was a like a decently long test too. You thought you were going to like totally bomb it, Jared, but you got like a 92 just based on pure, based on like pure recall. Like, dude, hadn't looked at it in years.
My thing with, I'm great at memorization. Like, I'm fucking autistic or some shit.
You got that mitochondria shit.
Well, I got some fucking, I got that big fucking, big dick style fucking mitochondria.
All right. All right.
But I was always the kid in class that I like refused to do the homework because I was just like, man, I know how to fucking do this. Just give me the test. And then I would like barely show up to class sometimes. And then I would come and ace the test. And then this happened in
teachers
chemistry
class. Teachers hate it. You know, when that
this happened in chemistry, they tried to fucking, they tried to drop me from a math class in college because, I just didn't show up.
Yeah.
Like I had zero, I showed up for the first day to get the syllabus and I talked to the instructor. And every time I was like, all right, do I need this fucking textbook or like, what are we doing here? And she said, yeah, you should get the textbook. Well, I didn't show up for like 2 straight months and she wanted to drop me. And I was like, I have the best class. Like I have a fucking 102%. How are you going to drop me? I'm clearly learning.
Right.
But I wasn't showing up and like participating. So
yeah, you weren't being a good neoliberal subject.
I was learning the fucking material.
That's not good enough. You have to act like you want it.
I didn't want it. I hate math. I'll do it.
All right. So I also, we've talked a little bit about the increasingly brittle global supply chains. Okay, fair point. But I'm even a little bit like trepidatious on this claim of and rising fascism.
Okay, like, wasn't that kind of by design though? Because if your supply chains aren't that great, maybe for a little while, isn't that like kind of
quite
good?
Profitable?
You can, yeah.
See the railroad industry in America, right? Like with the way that they do their scheduling for workers by essentially having as few people operating a train as possible for as long of a time as possible. How could like anything go wrong?
The train derailed on February 3rd at 8:54 p.m. It was carrying 20 cars of hazardous materials, including vinyl chloride, a highly flammable toxic gas that causes central nervous system problems and has been linked to a host of cancers.
You have not evacuated. Please leave the area.
In the days after the accident, Norfolk Southern worried the vinyl chloride could explode, so they did a controlled burn, potentially releasing phosgene, a gas used as a chemical warfare agent in World War I.
The precarity is a feature, not a bug, but we have to act like it's a bug.
That's what Gubert's doing right here. And also and rising fascism, like Gubert's acting like it's a bug, but as you said earlier, it's a feature. Like that it's neoliberalism is liberalism with a little bit more fascism involved.
I mean, you show me a fascist government that wasn't a liberal government first and I'll learn something.
Absolutely. But as the book's title suggests, the paradigm of globalization is now changing from a system of concentrated power and oligopoly to a world where regionalization and localization are the future. And I don't know if that seems true to me. Like, that seems like bullshit. Like, do you think that the paradigm of globalization, concentrated power, oligopoly is changing to regionalization and localization?
I mean,
do you have a local like Amazon type delivery service, an alternative?
Okay, so that's a fucking like cursed way of looking at things. What?
Yeah, that essentially the paradigm of like huge corporate structures concentrating power across multiple nations, you know, again, Amazon, Google, fucking
having a Google or having a fucking Amazon distribution center in your community is the opposite of like regionalization.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah. That's and you know, like all web services, like this Zencastr recording is being like hosted by Amazon, right?
Yeah,
so Amazon if anything,
it's gonna fucking eventually turn into Skynet.
If anything, it seems
it's
like
not because like they're all incompetent and like that, but that's yeah, that's the goal.
And again, even in like farm and food,
if you listen to like Amazon's like like earning statements and shit like that, the goal is Skynet,
right? Yeah, of course. But here's what I'm, even in farm and food, the ostensible like point of this series, right? Like the failures in global supply chains, the shortcomings in like the labor market has not created like regional economies in place of these large ones.
Okay.
You know,
Gubert's a farm writer.
Yeah.
The history of farming in the US has been this. From the jump. Like, what does he think? This was the first farming crisis?
Like, I'm just trying to think about like something local to me, right? Like, it's really hard to find eggs in some places in Colorado, right? But that hasn't like led to...
Eggs are really difficult to produce, though.
Well, there's been a lot of like avian flu in like egg producing like warehouses, right?
Well, that just comes from the environment. If anything, that just tells me we need to exterminate all of the wild birds.
Okay, folks, Jared has been like swigging off of a Jack Daniels bottle. He's like gone through the hole, essentially. All I'm saying is that I haven't like seen...
I've gone through the looking glass.
Yeah. All I'm doing is like buying more eggs from my neighbors who have backyard chickens. That doesn't really strike me as like a local concentration of like economic power, though, you know?
Yeah, backyard chickens, though, that sounds like a public health nuisance. We should probably keep all of our chickens in one. We should probably just build the biggest building we can structurally, like, we should use the laws of physics to build the largest chicken house possible and then get all of our eggs from that one place.
Hold on, Jared. I think, though, that this is an interesting thing that Gubert and the book's author, Karufar, are making. And this is something that leftists say occasionally too, which is that because like things are falling apart, late capitalism is like imminently demising, right? That this paradigm of globalization is changing. And I would disagree heavily with that.
It's not changing.
It's not changing. That's why it's falling apart.
Becoming more powerful.
Yeah. Like that's why it's falling apart. Like these contradictions are only increasing. They're not being deconstructed by some, you know, new way of producing the means of our society.
I mean, when they wrote the last fucking farm bill or whatever, this was the goal.
Right.
It was pitched as like something that was good for farmers, but like, I feel like anybody that knows anything about farming, that knows anything about like, especially raising livestock,
yeah,
should have been able to tell like this.
Right.
This is the worst fucking idea we've ever had.
So here's the evidence cited in that the paradigm of globalization is changing. One example of this sea change, she cites, is how, quote, the Biden administration's trade representative, Catherine Tai, has outlined a new direction for U.S.-China trade, one that puts labor and national interests ahead of consumer prices and individual corporate interests.
Okay, but...
But they outlined a direction. That's what they're saying, is they outlined a new direction.
Well, yeah, obviously. But like that in and of itself is the issue.
Right, and that's what he says. That Americans first approach with our biggest foreign trader is a key stake in the heart of the usual neoliberal corporate interest, she opines.
Yeah.
And don't think for a minute that the rest of the world hasn't noticed.
And take that part out of it, it's also fucking terrible for the environment.
Yeah.
And all of the people that are employed in this industry. It's awful for them.
Really question that whole puts labor and national interests ahead of consumer prices and individual corporate interests thing. I think that the individual corporate interests are still going to be coming out on top there.
Well, if I know anything about the Biden administration.
Yeah. In that recent rail negotiation, did he put labor and national interests ahead of consumer prices and individual corporate interests?
Oh, obviously. He had to show the laborers that they they needed to basically... Fuck, come on, guys.
They needed to be subservient to consumer prices and individual corporate interests as well.
Well, for the good of everybody. Come on, guys. Like, you guys gotta...
Classic.
You gotta buy... You still gotta buy these goods. Like, you don't need more money. You just need to... Come on, guys. This is... We're trying to help everybody.
All right. Another example is the federal government's mid-2022 approval of a $52 billion, quote, in grants and incentives for domestic semiconductor manufacturing, unquote.
That will definitely help farmers. See what the John Deere Corporation is. Just see how the John Deere Corporation is tying semiconductors to farming.
Right.
Because it's definitely leading to more freedom for farmers. That's why they're getting sued for fucking downloading like cracked Chinese software for their tractors.
That critical need was magnified during the COVID pandemic when breakdowns in the international supply chain left U.S. security agencies empty-handed and the nation vulnerable. Oh no, my national security agencies. In one way, Foruhar's vision of, quote, homecoming, unquote, is already in place in North American agriculture. Integration. It's a, quote, way of increasing productivity, resilience, and sustainability, end quote, she explains, all critical elements in tomorrow's farms and ranches. And again, these are just buzzwords, dude. Integration, productivity, resilience, sustainability. This means nothing.
You know what's fucked? So I have a degree in sustainability, right?
Yeah.
And is there any word that has been like more greenwashed the term sustainability?
It basically just means nothing now. Yeah.
Well, it's like organic food and like just all of it.
Yeah.
It's all been like a neoliberal project to just hand wave and obscure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just how, like, if any company talks to you about fucking sustainability, you can bet your ass that they are doing 19 things to fucking destroy sustainability. And then, like, they'll get fucking metal straws and everything. Like, the world's saved.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck. I love how they're using the word now integrator, like disruptor or something like that, right? Like, integrators, however, will need to focus more on, quote, regional markets and less on, quote, global markets. Today's market-grabbing oligopolists can expect much more government regulation and even more government-supported competition than before, too.
Well, I mean, yeah, you got to shift. You got to shift all the liability on blame.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Essentially, like, the government will create a whipping boy to have the liability, blame, and catch all the shit that is not profitable. Maybe government.
A neoliberal government loves a whipping boy.
Town of Springfield has been classified NWB, or nuclear whipping boy. In the first moments of a nuclear war, Springfield will be bombed at will by all friendly nations to calibrate their missiles.
Yeah! The only problem is we're fucking kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel now. We're
running out of whipping boys.
Well, we just got to create some more.
Get more farmers.
Yeah, that's innovation.
So ending in homecoming, Foruhar builds a strong case for neoliberalism's continued weakening. The world, and especially farmers and ranchers, should hope she's right. And I got to say, Gubert, you tried to write a critique of neoliberalism and you did more neoliberalism.
But
can I just refer Gubert to a better book that he should read instead of this stuff? A little book called Capital Volume 1. Become a better Marxist. Become just a Marxist, Gubert. Like, learn to follow an idea to its logical conclusion.
I mean, he's not prepared to read Capital Volume 1.
Well, he's a economist guy. Doesn't he want to know, like where's the linen coming from to make the coat and all that shit?
Well, I feel like he needs to read a little bit of Lenin first, and that'll give him a little more context, and then maybe he can understand Capital.
That'll ground him in, like, the ferment of working class anxiety. Yeah.
That's the route that I took, because I attempted to read Capital, and I was like, oh, fuck. I wasn't prepared for fucking, like, a liberal education by my, like, public education. There's no fucking way that I was prepared to read Capital.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, they don't want you to, right? So, Jethro, what do you think on neoliberalism?
Oh, boy. Well,
good thing or bad thing? What do you think?
Well, it's a, it's a matter of perspective again. For me personally, well, it's obviously been great. I've just been thriving now for basically my entire life. And it's all thanks to neoliberalism. NAFTA was actually a good thing. I think it's great that children basically assemble and mine the materials for all my goods.
Yep.
Because you don't have to pay them, I mean, at all sometimes.
Those small hands are more efficient as they're scratching amongst the crevices for remains of lithium.
Well, yeah, you know, anytime you have like a nice, it's like when you're trying to work on a car and your crescent wrench is a little bit too big. You just want that really nice, compact tool.
Well, here's a little neoliberalism for you. I think it was like two years ago, a bunch of like former child slaves from West Africa who had been conscripted into growing cocoa, like for chocolate, essentially like chocolate child slaves, right? They like filed a court case against the Nestle Corporation that was ultimately, you know, the ones who were getting the chocolate and therefore inspiring the child slavery. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court.
How did that case go? I'm sure those child slaves or former child slaves, I'm sure they had great legal counsel.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court said that because the child slavery did not happen in America, but was rather only profited from by American companies, it was not in their purview to make a moral judgment about it.
And we're back to Jim Bowie. Right?
I mean, yeah, you're right, dude. Yeah. That's fucking Bowie logic right there. Yeah.
Man, it's
not
so
my
good
county.
It's so good that the Supreme Court isn't political.
Just a bunch of fucking Jim Bowies on the Supreme Court. Just fucking Logan Paul and Jim Bowie, and those are all gonna, like, Logan Paul is gonna be Supreme Court justice. Watch.
Hey,
I just lathed that 20
all
years.
All I'm saying is I bet Jake Paul also, he just likes beer. And who doesn't, you know?
All right. Well, I think that, you know, this was serendipitous. I'm glad we got to talk a little bit about our favorite ideology, neoliberalism.
Yeah. Well, how about this, James? Mm-hmm. Do you think all of these microbreweries would exist without neoliberalism? I don't think so. You're thinking about this way too long. Yeah, they would exist. That'd be all that existed. It's the Anheuser-Busch company that wouldn't fucking exist.
Yeah. 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 Cause of course, like a lot of the microbreweries have, you know, once they get big enough, they just get bought out. Right. And then those microbrews are produced in like big factories, vats and stuff.
Well, yeah. Just look at like the sheer amount of like formerly local breweries that are now owned by the Anheuser-Busch Corporation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking more along the lines of like, well, but if there weren't lots of like defunct industrial areas, you know, to fucking be like, you know, what's the term for like
So you're saying that like the conditions, you're saying that the conditions that brought us the burnt out Midwest
led
to
may have had some ancillary effect on like creating the physical spaces that microbreweries could profligate in.
Sure.
And because like, think about your Jefferson beer supply, right? That was probably like some old like shop or like garage or something, right? But like that actually, community was like,
I think they built that place.
Oh, well, I stand corrected.
But the people that built that, they definitely used to put like underground, like metal and punk shows on in an old fucking, God, I want to say that was like an old auto garage or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. But I would say that like neoliberalism definitely provides the like desperation and squalor in a community that leads to like the DIY movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's kind of like the thing that was crushed by neoliberalism at first. And now we're forced to resort to going back to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like, oh, and they benefit from like the cheap labor that's been fucking pushed down.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, okay. So under the current system and everything like that, I don't understand how any business could be profitable if they actually paid their employees what, like, profits would cease to exist if employees were paid what they should be. That's kind of the whole, it's kind of the whole thing.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. Like, you start to tug at these loose ends and the whole thing starts to come apart, right? Like, our modern economy is essentially like a wet hairball irked up by a cat on a dirty kitchen floor.
And on a dirty gangplank of a ship.
Ah, a dirty scully floor. Yeah.
On the, it's your cat just vomiting up on the poop deck, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, what looks like a mass of like carefully arrayed networks of interconnection and profit and labor motives and all these things. It's just a fucking gross hairball.
I can sign on for that.
All right. Well, I'm dead tired, Jared. It's late. I'm going to let you go.
All right. Well,
oh, wait, we have to end the podcast.
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay. So, have we said the name of our Patreon yet?
I don't think we did on our last one. No, but we've been linking to it in the episode notes. So there'll be a link to our Patreon in the notes. The Patreon is titled The Poor Brotherhood of Composters.
Yeah, and just give us money. I'm not going to act like we fucking deserve it or any of that bullshit. Just
I'm not going to promise to like do any kind of release schedule. I'm going to try and get a few out this month. Maybe we'll get one a month, maybe we'll get one a week. I don't know. You know, we're just going to try and make an honest run at this. But one thing I do know is that you should give us $1 a month. It's all we ask.
Yeah. It's your money. Spend it how you feel. Once you give it to us, though, it's our money and we're going to spend it how we feel.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, if you give a homeless person some money, you got to be prepared for them to spend it on booze and drugs.
Well, hold on. It's an economic and political philosophy that capital, people, and goods should be able to cross internet borders freely in search of the most productive and profitable podcasts. And I think that, you know, you giving us your money is basically endorsing the neoliberal system. And it's going to make us more efficient.
Just cross some of that personal capital of yours over our borders.
And that makes us productive and profitable. And that's what neoliberalism is all about.
Yeah. So you guys are just going to make us into like good neoliberals.
Yeah, you guys will be like the farmers of America in the 1970s, and Jared and I are going to be the CEOs of Pfizer and ConAgra.
It's exactly like that. And if Willie Nelson wants to play some songs for us, that would that would be kind of like a personal I'd probably be done with that. Like I achieved my goal.
All right.
Come on, Willie.
I've been James.
Come play me some music. Pay your goddamn taxes.
Oh yeah, and they got him on tax evasion, didn't they?
What? I mean, a fucking actual like country music slash folk singer that still espoused the values that they were supposed to in like the modern age and openly smokes weed. Yeah, you gotta discipline that somehow. Isn't that what they got Capone on to?
Yeah, they did. Yep.
Ah, well.
All right. I've been James.
I'm Jared, aspiring tax evasion.
Can't say that on the podcast. Come on.
Or defender. Oh, shit. Allegedly.
That's a Jim Bowie moment right there.
In Minecraft. Shit. I did get too drunk and just give the game away. I will pay so many taxes on the money you guys give us.
Thank you for listening.
And, yeah, get yourself a cat.
This guy is the leader, see you now for them. They hold meeting everywhere, who the beach America. This guy is the leader, see you now for them. They hold meeting everywhere, who the beach America. They call the place to you, United Nations. Within United, inside United Nations. Who and who unite for United Nations? Nobody Atasha and Argentina Day. Nobody Aragon and Libya Day. Israel versus Lebanon. Iranio versus Iraqi. East West Block versus West Block East. Nobody them they owe United Nations. Disunited United Nations. One veto vote is equal to 92
or more.
We can sense be that you na animal sense. We can sense be that you na animal sense. Them human rights. Them go hold me to you, them go start yap human beings. Animal talk, don't start again. Dash them human rights. How animal go know, say they don't burn me a slave.